One Energy is an industrial power company and installer of on-site, behind-the-meter wind energy systems. In early October, the company unveiled its first 30-megawatt battery electric truck charging site in Findlay, Ohio. The site is fully built, energized, and waiting for its first fleet customers. From shovels in the ground to flipping the proverbial switch, One Energy accomplished all that in just 8 months. It takes longer than that just to get an appointment to talk with a utility company in California. One Energy CEO Jeremy Kent joins me to talk about the project, its potential, and why he chose to build this facility in Findlay. My conversation with Jeremy begins right after this.
Scraper Systems by Right Height is North America's leading name for automated rooftop snow removal from truck fleets. Safely clear 24 inches of snow and ice in less than 30 seconds. Scraper Systems fleet plows help reduce winter risks, protect your brand, and get your fleet on the road quickly after a snowstorm. Machines are available to ship today. Contact scrapersystems.com for more information.
Well, hi there, Jeremy, and thanks for joining us this afternoon on HGT Talks Trucking. I'm glad you could take the time to join us.
Thanks, Jim.
You are building a big new project in Findlay, Ohio. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Findlay, Ohio in just a minute, but could you give us an overview of what One Energy is and does and what you're about to do in Findlay?
Absolutely. So One Energy is an industrial power company. That's a very fancy way of saying that we deal with big power problems for big energy users all on their side of the grid. So everything we do is targeted towards an existing or a new industrial. That's what brought us to the Megawatt Hub in Findlay, Ohio, which is a 30-megawatt expandable megawatt hub that has been designed to accommodate up to 30 megawatts of electric semi-charging all at one site. And that site is actually fully built, energized, and waiting to pick out which trucks and which customers and which chargers.
How long has this project been on the go for?
So we started this 8-9 months ago, I think, is when we actually broke ground, Jim. Got it up and running, went surprisingly quick. We did some paperwork before that, but the advantage of doing everything ourselves with our own people and our own equipment is we can move a whole lot faster than a lot of other groups.
Well, what I was trying to figure out in reading up on the company and reading your recent press releases, what's the difference between Energy One and a utility company in the traditional model, like the Ohio Public Utilities Commission regulates electricity, I presume?
Yep.
Are you outside of that, beside it, under it, over it? How do you fit in?
So if you ever want to have a really fun question, ask my regulatory attorneys if we're a utility or not. It all comes down to the fine nuance. Now, the clear answer, though, is we are not a public utility, which is what tricks you into the regulation portion under most states. So we do not have a certified territory. What that means is I don't have a geographical area where a customer has to use me like a traditional utility does. And I also have to earn my customers, right? Every one of my customers chooses to work with us. We are never their sole source of power, so they're still connected to another utility. But what we are is the group that steps in the middle and says, look, if you don't want to deal directly with your utility, if you want access to higher voltage or more complicated things or want to make your own power on site, we'll do all of that for you, and then we still connect to the utility with you. So it allows us to insert ourselves between the traditional utilities and the customers to do what they want. But the key distinction is because we don't have a monopoly, we aren't regulated, and every project we do only serves one industrial site at a time. Does that answer the question, Jim?
I think so. Where does the energy come from? Who generates the electricity? You have windmills on site, so are they yours, or do they belong to the utility commission?
So those are absolutely ours. So the video that you saw of the Megawatt Hub in Findlay showed some existing wind turbines. Those are part of separate projects. So we have two factories right next to us. Ball Corporation and Whirlpool Corporation both have factories. We own and operate the wind turbines that are helping power those facilities. Right now, the power for our megawatt hubs comes directly from the grid, and that's because these are brand new industries, right? You know, these aren't industries with 50 years of history. As we get more and more long-term participation from bigger and bigger names, we absolutely will go build some of our own renewables to help provide green energy on site. But we always do that once we have a long-term contract.
That makes sense. You wouldn't want to invest in that kind of stuff on a whim, would you?
Right now, everything can be, you know, picked up and moved to a different site in the future if we need to for capacity. It's pretty hard to pick up and move a wind turbine or, you know, 50 acres of solar. That doesn't fit so well in the truck.
Right, exactly. So I think in the video, there's two windmills kind of on your property where the trucks are set up in that radial charging arrangement and what looks to be five or six more somewhere off in the distance. Is that all part of a project, or are those other windmills something completely separate to what you're up to?
So those are all our wind turbines. That's all our land.
Wind turbines. I'm sorry. I shouldn't call them windmills.
Okay. You can call them whatever you'd like. Dinosaur. As long as my customers pay for them. So we started the company, you know, years ago, and then built our first two big projects where we owned the turbines on this piece of property that you see now in the video in that backdrop. Put our corporate office here. So right now I'm actually sitting 600 feet from one of those wind turbines right now. And then we kind of kept expanding. So we realized we wanted to get to that 138 kV line. We bought some more land. We expanded the area. And this whole thing is, you know, essentially becoming a big electrified industrial campus to us now. So the answer is it's different projects, but it's all owned by us and all connected together, Jim.
So those plants that you mentioned, just for interest's sake, they're running totally off your turbines, or are they still drawing power from the grid as well?
They are still drawing power from the grid. So it is extremely expensive to try to get off grid. It generally doesn't make sense unless you have a reason to, and usually that only happens in third world countries. So in the US, it's far better to just do better to get some of your power on site, but to, you know, get the rest from the grid, and that tends to work far better.
And how would this arrangement with you in the middle between the customer and the utility look like to the customer? How many bills do you have to pay every month?
So to the customer, usually they have two bills, one from their utility and one from what we produce on site for renewables.
Okay.
You know, and we help audit the first bill to make sure that that's right for them. So usually it's not substantially different from what they're currently used to dealing with. The difference is that our bill from our on-site renewables is usually fixed for 20 years. So the price of power doesn't change. It makes the math a whole lot easier.
So talk a little bit about the site now, if we could. My first question is, why Findlay, Ohio? It's not exactly a hotbed of battery electric vehicle activity at this point.
So you're absolutely right in that it's not a hotbed of battery electric vehicle activity. What it is a hotbed of is trucking and distribution. So Findlay, Ohio is located on I-75, not too far south of 8090 east-west, all in kind of this Northwest Ohio manufacturing corridor. A tremendous amount of logistics runs through Northwest Ohio. And so Findlay, Ohio has something like 15 distribution centers of different sizes all located here. Best Buy, Lowe's, Whirlpool, Campbell's, McLean, and several others I'm forgetting off the top of my head, all run regional distribution centers out of here. And so what Findlay, Ohio has are its two very important things. It has a lot of trucks, and it has a lot of big industrial power. So a lot of big industrial power flows through the transmission lines around here. And so what we have found is that instead of chasing all of the incentives out in California following mandates, that if you look at cheap land, cheap power, and a whole lot of trucking, you actually can make a case for electric semis working right now. So that's what we did. We said, why are we waiting around? Why are we chasing, you know, we have no intention of chasing incentives. We've never done that as a company. Let's just go see if this actually works. And what we've shown in the tests that we've done is that this can be competitive now. It's not quite on par with diesel yet, but it's getting really close. And if you start getting some scale to this, the hope is that all of a sudden, you know, these manufacturers bring the price of that truck down just a little bit more, and you're there, and you're there without mandates.
So have you relied on incentives to build these facilities, or this one facility, or is that coming all out of your operating costs?
Completely out of our balance sheet. So we did it on balance sheet to prove it could be done. Didn't take a single penny of incentive money to build this megawatt hub.
So the taxpayers of the state of Ohio aren't on the hook for this in any way, shape, or form.
They're going to get paid a whole lot of money when I start paying taxes.
I guess. You said earlier, right off the bat, you're 7 or 8 months, 6 or 7 months to put this thing from shovels in the ground to kind of being operational? That's not even heard of in California. You can't even get an appointment with the utility company in 6 to 7 months.
That's exactly it, Jim. And I think, you know, California has a weak grid. PG&E is a mess, right? The system out there is stressed to its limits and has a whole lot of fundamental changes that have to happen in order to make it work. That's why you don't see a lot of new factories in California. The Midwest is very good at this, right? From kind of Texas up through the Midwest, up into PJM, right? You know, there are, you know, major power grids ready to take on new load who have significant capacity right now today. And what we have found and believe is that if you are able to locate next to that capacity while still having the right geographic things you need, like the interstate and the existing trucking, all of a sudden you have a whole lot more interesting proposition and you can do stuff in months, not years. And then the advantage we have is we're vertically integrated. So it's our people, you know, installing this cable, running our trenchers and building our own substation. So we can move tremendously fast when we're ready to go.
And when the moment comes, literally what? Just connect to the grid? Is it that simple?
We're already connected to the grid, Jim. If you went out there right now today, you could have 30 megawatts of power and plug in.
Yeah.
You know, we already have the transformers to bring this down to, you know, the 400 volt class. So, you know, we literally could go plug in 50 chargers tomorrow. The only reason we stopped and didn't install the chargers, and this is kind of what you're well-versed in, is that there is no standard charger yet. So at this point, we're just kind of referring to this as, you know, which charging cable for your cell phone do you need? It's the same for the truck. So as soon as people pick the trucks and they tell me which charger they want, I'll install all those chargers they need into those power islands.
Well, what about all the environmental stuff that they seem to be jumping all those hoops through in California and the site permitting and all that other stuff? I mean, it's too complex. I can't even get my head around it. Does that exist in Ohio as well?
So, Jim, I have to start and admit I'm born and raised in Southern California.
Okay.
And I actually, one of my first jobs was helping to pour concrete and pump concrete. And so I learned to run a concrete pump truck. And when I went to Michigan later on and started doing that as another summer job and a couple years later, everybody started laughing at me because I was putting down plastic below the concrete pump. And they're like, what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, wet concrete's a hazardous material. And they looked at me and said, since when? And that's when I realized that some of the rules in California were a little bit off the deep end. And some of the rules in California, well, most of them didn't exist in the rest of the country. And so, you know, we are able to move a whole lot faster. This site that you saw in the video happens to be in an unzoned township. So there's no zoning rules. Obviously, we follow all of the environmental rules, but it turns out when you have no diesel on site, no toxic chemicals, and are in the middle of what was a farm, there aren't a whole lot of environmental problems. And so it becomes a whole lot faster to do this at scale. But, you know, we can build gigawatts in the Midwest while everybody in California is still trying to figure out how to get PG&E to, you know, get them in the queue.
Well, the only obvious downside I can see to this, and I'm not sure how much of a downside it is, the battery electric truck people will tell you that battery electric trucks don't work real well in the wintertime. And last time I was in Findlay, Ohio, they still have snowplows there. So yep. Are you facing a bit of an uphill challenge to get the trucking industry to come into your area? Because they say, well, I can only run 100 miles instead of 200 in the winter.
You know, candidly, Jim, that's what we don't know.
Okay.
What we have found is that there's not a lot of really good data about real world operation of electric trucks, right? There's some very good data sets inside some very warm ports.
Yep.
But if you start looking at, you know, the over the road type vehicles, there isn't a lot of good data. So we're curious to see. We've been surprised by some things. We've seen trucks perform far better in, you know, local city routes than on longer mid-range routes. We've seen exceptional performance beyond what we estimated in some cases. So we're learning that. And so that's the real question. And I think we're going to find out as we do more and more of this. And at some point, you know, the electric truck manufacturers have to figure out how to solve that problem or figure out how to get enough heat overnight so that it's preheated and stays warm. But that's the only way this works in the long run. If all you're doing is electric trucks in California, you haven't really solved a big problem.
Well, yeah. And I've mentioned that a bunch of times in various commentaries that it's okay if we do this in California, but what about everybody else? Like New Hampshire and Ohio and, you know, pick one. Nobody else is really heavily invested at this point in time, and it's 2023.
Right. And that's the real thing. If you look at truck volumes, right, you know, everybody can go look at the Department of Transportation's 2050 truck volume forecast. And there's a whole lot more big, thick red arrows in the Midwest than there are in California. And so, you know, stuff is made here, stuff is moved here. You know, this was the Rust Belt that we now call the Heartland. But the reality is this is where the factories are, and this is where a lot of trucking is. And so if you can't solve this problem, you know, what's the point of solving the problem on the coast?
Well, being on the I-75 corridor, you're a little ways south of Toledo. You're about a third of the way between Toledo and Dayton.
Yep.
And then another hour and a bit down to Cincinnati. Could you conceivably build another depot somewhere the other side of Dayton and have literally a corridor where trucks could do round trips just with a top-up charge somewhere in the middle?
I could conceivably build a number of these, and I would. We have no announcements to make at this time, but we are absolutely looking forward to seeing what the Midwest can do with charging, and we think this can be done a whole lot faster than it can other places.
Yeah, I, not knowing the whole picture, I'm inclined to agree with you. Well, good luck with this. It sounds like a really cool project.
Thank you.
Another question comes to mind, and I should have researched this. Where does Ohio get its electric capacity from? Is it wind, hydro, coal, natural gas? What are you running on there?
So Ohio is primarily a coal state that is becoming a natural gas state that is lagging most of the country in renewables.
Okay.
We have found there's some push to do more renewables coming organically, but the candid reality is this is a coal state becoming a gas state.
I guess that's a step up or the next stage cleaner, right?
You know, depends who you talk to. I think it's easier not to get in the middle of that fight.
I agree with you. Yeah, it's a difficult one to answer. I mean, it's still a fossil fuel, but I don't know. Above my pay grade.
You know, elementary kids about energy, right? And I always kind of go, okay, well, what's your favorite form? And I go, well, what's the problem with it? And then I break their hearts and tell them the problem. And they go, well, wind. And I go, oh, no, there's all kinds of problems with wind, too. And I go through everything. And eventually someone goes, they all suck. And you're like, that's the reality. Every one of these has their trade-offs. So we have to figure out what the trade-offs are, and we have to figure that out. And right now I'm for, you know, let's get as much energy as we can and solve energy poverty and then figure out the rest.
Well, I'm with you on that. I mean, I've often said, why let perfect stand in the way of good?
Exactly.
It's an improvement. Maybe not where we want to get to, you know, at some point in time, but we got to take baby steps. I think this is just too big a thing to turn around overnight.
Well, so I think it's funny. Every time we talk about, you know, a customer of ours who is getting 40 or 50 or 70% of their power from on-site renewables, someone goes, so you're still on the grid. And, you know, the response is yes, but we're 70% better. And so, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to get all the way. If everybody just figured out how to do 50% better, we'd all be in a whole lot better shape overall.
Jeremy, we're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how this is going to look for the trucking industry, what they can be expecting from this facility in Findlay. I'm Jim Park. This is HGT Talks Trucking. We'll be back with Jeremy Kent right after this.
Time is money, and that's why CatScale built the Way My Truck app. Your drivers can complete their entire way without ever leaving the cab. They'll see their weights on their mobile device or tablet, and scale tickets can be automatically emailed to you. With a fleet profile, you can save back office time as well. No driver reimbursements. And you'll have access to report data. Find out more at waymytruck.com.
We're back with Jeremy Kent, the CEO of One Energy. Jeremy, let's talk a little bit now about what this is going to look like for the trucking industry. We're obviously heavily interested in developing these sites and seeing them come to fruition. The question is, can you get the power to them, or do they come to you to get charged up?
So, Jim, I think you just hit the nail on the head. The biggest fundamental change that's going to happen in the trucking industry as it electrifies is that everyone's going to realize that every truck depot, every distribution center, and every truck fuel station is in the wrong place.
So, yeah,
you know, it made a lot of sense to not build your big diesel truck stop below the high voltage power line because, you know, things that go boom shouldn't be under things that spark. But now all of that's changing. And so what I think is going to happen and what the thesis of our megawatt hubs is that it doesn't have to be on site. Your truckers don't have to report to your distribution center first thing in the morning. They can report 1 mile away, pick up their truck or pick up their truck and trailer and either get started or come over to you. And I think overall it adds minutes, and everybody would prefer not to add minutes. That's great. But that's kind of the reality of how to get the power, but it adds minutes to the day. And now arguably it also does some much simpler things. It lets that trucker park closer to their truck. It lets a bunch of other things be a little bit cleaner. But I think that's the difference, is that you're going to have these power sites that are capable of getting that power, and you're going to have a reasonable radius around them where you pick up your truck and then go to work.
Yeah, you don't want to waste too much of your charge getting back and forth from the charger to the truck or to the trailer, do
right.
you?
Yeah. No, and that's where I think this kind of hub concept of, if you can put it in the middle of, 10 or 15 distribution centers all within 2, 3, 4 miles, right? You have a tremendous concentration where it works. And until everybody figures out a network, which is, a ways away, the right strategically placed hubs are what allow this to get started.
Okay, let's talk about the hub then. We've got some B-roll here. We'll roll this and we can see what we're talking about. The arrangement that you have on this particular site, according to the video, you call them radial chargers?
So it's a radial configuration. Radial configuration,
yeah.
In our power islands.
Okay. And what, I presume 6 trucks per stanchion can charge as long as they need to be there. And you've got, I think I counted 108 hookup points in that video. You could have conceivably 108 trucks charging at one time, or you have capacity for 90-something, I think.
Well, so here's the thing, is we don't think all those trucks want to charge at the same time. We think that what is going to happen is that everybody is going to park their trucks and expect them all to be charged by the next shift or the next morning. And we think for some companies, that charging profile is charge them as fast as they get in. For some, it's optimize it throughout the night because you have a very predictable shift. We think some are going to show up and say, hey, we've got a red hot recharge. This one has to cut to the front of the line. And so the real math becomes, how do you optimize the charging needs of each individual trucking company to the lowest number of chargers you need, right? And so if that charger is a high-speed charger and it can charge a truck in 2 hours, right, you don't want to have it plugged in for 8 hours. It doesn't make any sense. You're wasting that capacity. And so that's where we like the radial configuration. With that crane configuration with one or more booms on there, we're able to take 2 or 3 chargers and optimize them across all those different trucks in whatever pattern that individual company wants. So if one of our customers, has a certain configuration they want to go in, another one has a different configuration, that's great. They can each run their own power island the way they want to with their own chargers. And then what we also think is that, the real key is going to become, how do you move that charger point to point? And so the nice part is you can do that all above the head of those trucks. So just lift up above the truck, go to wherever the next position is. That might be the next one in line. It might be the most important one 3 down. And all of a sudden you have customization without buying a charger for every truck. If you have to buy a charger for every truck, you're just killing your economics.
You also have the question of the amount of energy you're drawing, the time of day you draw it, and the current that you're pulling through. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not the right word, but sorry. How do you factor all that into a, somebody who's used to saying, well, I can't charge between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. because that's peak pricing and demand is really high and blah, blah, blah. Do you level all that out for them, or is that all built into their rate?
So the nice part is, because we're an industrial power company, we aren't a one-trick pony. I think what you're going to find is that electric trucking only works when you combine it with other things well. And so, in addition to doing electric truck charging on site, right now we've publicly announced that we're doing Bitcoin mining on site. We can ramp those up and down. So I can turn the Bitcoin mining down while I'm charging, turn the Bitcoin mining back up when the charging's done. And to the utility, I can maintain that level profile. And when all of a sudden the grid has a power problem, when the grid is super stressed, I can turn all of those off and get paid for being a huge resource to the grid, because I can turn 30 megawatts off in 5 minutes if I have to. And so the reality is you have to kind of play in these markets. And so everybody plays in these markets already in the diesel space, but these markets are, hours and days and weeks, right? When do you buy your fuel? When do you store up? When do you buy futures? We're just now doing that in seconds and minutes. And so it's a much different market of when it's super cheap versus when it's not cheap versus how demand works versus when your peak demands are measured versus, if you really do things right, that demand problem everybody talks about isn't the problem. Because if you're on the transmission system and on the right tariffs, you're only getting hit for your demand on the peak points of the year when it's stressing the grid the most, not on the fact that you used a lot at 2 a.m. on a Wednesday in the middle of, you know, of fall, who cares? And so, you know, we can do that at this scale. You can't do that at a distribution center yourself because you aren't at that voltage.
I see. Can you supply energy to these factories to set up chargers on site at the factory, like the distribution center, so the truck could theoretically charge while they're being loaded or unloaded?
It would be a very lucky distribution center to have enough capacity to really do that right. Most distribution centers are served by between like 1 and 3 megawatts, right? And that's kind of to deal with the HVAC loads. If you take a single Tesla semi, that can charge it up to a megawatt, right? Now imagine you have 200 trucks at your DC. It takes the next 10 DCs down,
yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. Okay, so, I was being charitable.
So I think that's the problem, is just the scale was never built for those.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden these, you know, quote unquote, big, ugly transmission lines are the new pipelines of the future. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, being in the right place that makes sense, all of a sudden doing that. And then it's also, you know, candidly playing at 138,000 volts is not what anybody's used to, right? I don't know a lot of truckers who are used to walking into 138,000 volt substations. So the real trick is figure out who's going to step in kind of the bureaucracy, complexity, and just kind of candidly the BS of utility stuff, and make it super simple for trucking companies who can say, look, I want to buy 6 trucks. I want one island. I want these chargers. I don't want to think about anything else. Can you give me a fixed rate to do this? Yep, we can. The rest is our problem. And I think that's the real future, is that you start seeing partnerships from companies you never saw them before, right? I sat on the board of economic development in Hancock County, where Findlay's located, for years. I love all of the trucking companies, all the distribution companies that are here. But as a power guy, I never had a reason to talk to the trucking guys, right? We didn't have a lot of overlap other than they delivered the parts for us. Now, all of a sudden, their entire industry and one of our biggest growth segments are the same thing. All of a sudden, all of these power companies should be talking to logistics companies and DCs and everything else, saying, how do we work together? And that's a very interesting new set of partnerships that we're excited about.
So you're not looking necessarily at a big, big company like, say, R&L Carriers down by Dayton with hundreds of trucks.
There's an R&L being built in Findlay right now, and we'd be happy to look at them too. But we're also looking at, you know, a lot of trucking companies are 10 to 20 trucks.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at them, and we're looking at the really big guys. And none of them are very good at power, right? That's not what they've built their companies around.
Well, can you build out a terminal for a company like R&L that you've just built in Findlay for 100 of their trucks rather than 110 truck fleets?
So this site in Findlay, for example, is expandable to 150 megawatts.
Okay.
So, yikes. You know, right. So I can charge 450 trucks at the same time at 300 kW, right? I can charge 150 Tesla semis at the same time if they had enough trucks on the road. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is, this is the scale you have to get to. But, you know, everybody loves to talk about Iowa 80 as kind of the world's biggest truck stop. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but that's what it loves to talk about.
Yeah.
Right. The reality is, electric truck stops are going to all be that big to be cost effective.
They'll have to be. Yeah.
Right. So what you're talking about is, how do you build out a network of Iowa 80s? And then how does that start with, you know,
where do you put them?
Companies? Well, exactly. Where do you put them? Where do they go? How does that start? Because it starts as out and back routes where everybody knows they have power at night. And as you said it right there, you know, it kind of expands to, now you've got a few of these hubs. So maybe you're charging at hub 2 tonight and hub 4 the next day on your route. And you know that you're in an area where you can get to a hub. And eventually, hopefully, all those hubs become a network. But that takes time.
Do you see that facility in Findlay or one like it as a traditional sort of truck stop where the truck on its route from Toledo to Cincinnati would stop there for a period of time, pick up a partial or a full charge, and then continue with the trip?
I think when you have a network of these, absolutely. I don't think that's why you build them. I think you build them for the people who are based there, who can just have that certainty of the out and back routes, the 12-hour shifts, the predictability. Because until you have 20 of these things, you don't have the kind of the network you need.
You don't have the network yet, yeah.
But once you have the network, you better believe that there's people who are going to start saying, okay, I can now run a route down I-75 you know, and I can now have multiple places to charge. I can optimize the rest of my routes. And then these, you know, these world-class logistics companies are going to apply their software and optimize the heck out of it. And that's mm-hmm. great. And that's when you start saying, okay, now we need to, you know, start working with the retail partners.
Okay, so how does this, excuse me, how does this look for the trucking company then? Did they have to sign long-term contracts with you? And what's the business model for the fleet who wants to set up shop in your yard?
I think that's an excellent question, Jim, and I'm going to give you a very candid answer. We're still making that up.
Still making it up as you go along. Okay.
I don't think the optimum answer, right, is that all of the trucking companies agree to be the best users of power possible, to do whatever they're told in terms of responding to the grid, and then they optimize their power cost. But that's not what trucking companies are built around right now. And I'm not sure they want to deal with minute-to-minute risk. And so I think the candid reality is you're going to have some level of risk shifting that comes at some cost premium. And the question is, you know, I'm happy to lock in your cost of power for 20 years right now, if you'd like, at this site. You know, but I'm doing that with a nice risk premium built in, and probably isn't the right long-term answer. So I think that's going to be the question, is how much risk in real-time energy markets do trucking companies want to have? And my guess is, like every other industry, it's going to start out with just, you know, you deal with giving us the diesel, and by the end, you're buying diesel futures.
Yeah. As they grow and expand and figure it out. Right. Mm-hmm. So on a 20-year contract, though, conceivably the cost of electricity could go down as it scales up and you secure more capacity. Are you going to be stuck with an inflated price in 10 years' time as that starts to happen? Or are you rates going to fluctuate with...
Nice part is we're already at the highest level, right? We're already at the transmission kind of super high voltage level stuff. There isn't kind of a market to get bigger.
Okay.
We don't have that issue. The question becomes, like, does the price of power go down over time? And the truth is, over any long-term period at the retail side, that's never really happened. It's happened at the wholesale side. Now, also, if I'm going to lock in 20-year rates, I'm going to start building on-site renewables that I can lock in 20-year rates with, because I can't call the gas company or the coal company and say, give me a 20-year rate. They'll just laugh at me. And they'll say, how about a 3-year fixed? And so we'll start doing renewables when we start locking in 20-year contracts.
Okay. Running a little short on time here, but a couple more questions I want to ask you. You mentioned the chargers a while back. They're all different. How do you manage that? Do you install the charger the carrier wants, or do you install a number that are different and say, you can have that one, the other guy can use the one over the corner?
So we've installed a couple to demo trucks with here, right? So we installed like an ABB Terra 180 outside to just allow a bunch of different platforms to test. But the reality is, even inside a single truck model, you can get different charging configurations, right? You can order, you know, that over the road truck with 180 kW, a 360, or whatever charging capacity for rates. So it's so specific that it doesn't make sense to do until that customer says, here's the truck I want, and here's the configuration I want the chargers in. And what we've seen in the market, the chargers can kind of always beat the trucks in terms of order. So this is just like when you decide to buy the Apple, you know, Apple 19 or 27 or whatever number they're on, and you say, what charger do they have this time? You know, it almost needs to come with, you know, in the box. The difference is, you know, you're going to buy one charger for 3 or 6 trucks, depending on your configuration.
But I noticed on your website, you've got a really amazing Q&A section. You did it a little bit differently than a lot of websites do. Can you just expand on that a little bit to give folks something to chew on and maybe generate a bit of interest in going there and finding out for themselves?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. So, you know, for better or worse, we built our website to be a place where you can go learn, because a lot of the stuff that we're doing, from behind the meter wind to charging electric semis, there isn't a lot of good information on. So, you know, you can go to our website and go to the OE feed, and you can see kind of all of the history of things that we've done and announcements and press releases and videos all in one spot. You can go to the video frequently asked questions, because we found a lot of people just prefer to watch a video. And, you know, in that case, for most of the behind the meter wind stuff we do, we have every question we've ever been asked by a customer with a video answer. I think you just kind of did a really good job of calling me out, saying I probably ought to put some answers in there too for some of the electric charging that's coming. But I'll make sure we get on that and get some more answers up there.
Well, I wish you luck with this, my friend. It's other than doing it in Findlay, Ohio, which you've explained and justified perfectly, I don't see any wrinkles in this deal at all. It'd be nice to see some trucks up there starting to run and put it to the test.
Well, we're working on it. We've got an Orange EV here. We have an eCascadia here, and we're working on getting a few more things out here and a whole bunch of companies testing them. So we're excited about it, Jim, and thank you for making the time to talk to us about it. We look forward to talking to you more and getting you out here one of these days when it's nice and full.
All right. Well, Jeremy Kent from One Energy, I do appreciate your time, sir, and thanks for spending a bit of it here on HGT Talks Trucking with us. Take care.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Jeremy Kent, CEO of One Energy. Jeremy joined us from One Energy headquarters in Findlay, Ohio. If you like what you see here on HGT Talks Trucking, please tell your friends and coworkers about us, and don't forget to poke that subscribe button. Check out our other social media channels too. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And check out the digital version of HGT. You'll find tons of great trucking industry content at truckinginfo.com. I'm Jim Park. Thanks for watching.